Good morning, everyone. You're listening to the World Teacher Program for Share International New Zealand on Planet FM 104.6. Each Friday morning, we bring you information from the teachers of the Ageless Wisdom. The purpose of our program is to introduce Maitreya, the world teacher for the age of Aquarius. Maitreya does not come alone. He brings with him the Masters of Wisdom, a group of highly evolved teachers. They work in many fields and can teach us the art of living, how to live in right relationship with each other. With their inspiration, we can transform our civilization, creating justice and peace for us all.
Good morning, everyone, and welcome to our program. Today we have a couple of articles from the January-February 2022 issue of Share International magazine. The first one is titled "The True Value of Leisure," and the second one is about the environment. It's titled "Regeneration: Ending the Climate Crisis in One Generation." If we have time at the end, we might read a brief excerpt from one of Maitreya's messages. But to start with, here's the article about leisure. It's by a group member over in Germany called Elisa Graf. If there are silver linings to be gleaned by living through a pandemic, having learned to place more value on our time could very well be one of them. As daily life ground to a halt through lockdown after lockdown, millions of us found ourselves with more time on our hands. Though many jobs were lost and businesses shuttered, these stark conditions also gave many people a chance to re-evaluate their priorities. In a November 2021 article for the magazine Wired, Catherine Himes notes that people are now changing employers, downshifting on the career ladder, or taking time away from the workforce altogether. With new clarity and savings from the COVID era, some workers have stepped back from precarious frontline jobs made brutally hard in the pandemic. Others report foregoing opportunities for money or status in exchange for greater flexibility and self-determination. As a result, people are quitting their jobs in record numbers. According to the US Labor Department, an unprecedented 4 million people resigned from their jobs in April 2021 alone, leading observers to dub this period the Great Resignation. This description, Himes suggests, misses the point, and he says, taken on its surface, the Great Resignation foregrounds the language of job status, but misses a parallel, arguably bigger story, the radical realignment of values that is fueling people to confront and remake their relationship to life at home, with their families, with their friends, and in their lives outside of labour. At another such historical moment, nearly a century ago, when millions of people were suddenly jobless due to the Great Depression, the philosopher Bertrand Russell penned, I guess this is an article, it's titled "In Praise of Idleness," which outlined the necessity for meaningful leisure for all human beings and challenging our still long-held cultural assumption that a person's value can only be measured by his or her economic productivity. In a 2020 New Statesman article that notes today's relevance of Russell's argument, Max Hayward, a lecturer in philosophy at the University of Sheffield, explains, Russell believed that we don't only need to reform the economic system in which some are worked to the bone while others suffer jobless destitution. We also need to challenge the cultural ethic that teaches us to value ourselves in proportion to our capacity for economically productive labour. Human beings are more than just workers. We need to learn how to value idleness. Hayward points out that with gross domestic product, or GDP, as our standard measure for success, we must deem one society a relative failure if its citizens earn on average £1,000 a year less than its neighbours, even if they have more leisure, play more sports, take more walks, read more books, listen to more music, and paint more pictures. But, he says, this thinking dooms us. And he goes on to say, the society that Russell imagines, one that invests in meaningful idleness, is truly revolutionary. Not just because its economic structures have been reformed, but because it has changed the way it understands and values itself. Benjamin Krem defines leisure as a God-given quality in his book titled The Art of Living. And here's a quote. Leisure is doing what you innately want to do, which is to be creative. It is the opportunity to be creative. He explains creative activity coming from the soul as the nature of life, and says that the art of living is in fact creative living, which entails all aspects of life. This is why, he says, leisure is essential. Yet, as a result of today's stressful living conditions, Krem adds, most people are so devitalized by repetitive work processes, by poor conditions, by the sheer deadness and sameness of their activities day by day, that creativity is almost the last thing you would expect. Actually, there's another quote here from Benjamin Krem from that same book, The Art of Living. I'll read that now. The immediate need is to transform work processes, to free from mechanical drudgery the countless millions who now know no other meaning in their daily work. And this a quote from Maitreya from message number 3. Let me take you into a world where no man lacks, where no 2 days are alike, where the joy of brotherhood manifests through all men. And back to Benjamin Krem. Leisure is doing what you would like to do, what rests the body, the mind, the heart, or which allows you the time to do for yourself something over and above what you do for the community. And back to the body of the article, it goes on, in addition, as a result of widespread poverty and social injustice, mass numbers of people around the planet live deeply unfulfilled lives, dedicated only to earning enough to survive, therefore finding no opportunity for leisure. Mr. Krem argues that it is this enforced poverty that prevents the demonstration of the true inner spiritual nature of humanity. The solution is the sharing of the world's resources so that every person has access to the goods that enable him to meet his basic needs, which are also the basic rights enshrined in the United Nations Universal Declaration of Human Rights. Benjamin Krem writes that education for leisure will release in people the possibility for the development of their inner skills, talents, and potential in a way which could hardly be envisaged at present. And what might such education look like? To Bertrand Russell, it should be one of education's primary goals to equip the population with the necessary abilities, knowledge, and habits to enjoy creative leisure. Max Hayward suggests this would mean reform. Access to higher education would need to be greatly expanded, while university and school curricula should place as much emphasis on creative arts and the pursuit of pure curiosity as on employable skills. Imagine if our schools were like that. This era of education for leisure may not be a distant dream, but already underway, considering the enormous variety of online material available today, from do-it-yourself YouTube videos that allow people interested in anything and everything to learn new skills, as well as the expansion of free, massive, open online courses, MOOCs for short, available for the pursuit of lifelong learning. In these times of unprecedented global crisis, the freeing of human beings by the enabling of more leisure has the potential to promote a renaissance, the flourishing of human creativity that could truly transform our world. And that article, again, was by a group member, Elisa Graf, and her references are, I think these are magazines, New Statesman and Wired, and also Benjamin Krem's book titled The Art of Living, as well as the book containing messages from Maitreya, titled Messages from Maitreya the Christ, available through Share International Foundation. So changing tack now, this next article is very much about the environment, and it's entitled Regeneration, Ending the Climate Crisis in One Generation, by Paul Hawken. That's the name of the book, and of course Paul is the author. And this is a book review by another group member living in the US called Cher Gilmore. The book Regeneration is about so much more than climate change. For Paul Hawken, reversing climate change is an outcome. The real goal of regeneration is justice, because he sees injustice as the driver of the climate crisis. Hawken believes that getting humanity to pay attention to saving the world requires creating a world worth saving. That is, we have to make sure we're serving our children, the poor and the excluded. If we aren't, we're not addressing the climate crisis. He says, regeneration puts life at the centre of every action and decision. It applies to all of life: grasslands, farms, insects, forests, fish, wetlands, coastlands and oceans. And it applies equally to family, communities, cities, schools, religion, commerce and governments, and most spectacularly, to climate. He points out that, unfortunately, 98% of humanity right now is disengaged on climate. In his view, that's because people don't respond to imperatives such as we must do such and such or else. They respond to possibility. And the book Regeneration is a treasure trove of possibility, one that will amaze, inspire, and activate any reader. But it may also frustrate by offering so many possibilities that readers may be hard-pressed to choose among them for personal involvement. The book Regeneration also stimulates action by showing the interconnections among all things. It doesn't make climate the enemy or the other, separate from us and what we do, but sweeps us up into the possibility of participating in changes that will make life better for us all. The book is guaranteed to broaden the reader's understanding of the climate crisis and what really will be required to change the downward spiraling trajectory. Nothing short of systemic change in almost all aspects of our communal lives, from transport to what we eat and the buildings we occupy. Since all living systems are connected and work together, or don't when disturbed, all parts must be included in a new way of living on the earth for regeneration to occur. The book is an expansion of Hawken's initial edited work on climate, which was titled Drawdown, the most comprehensive plan ever proposed to reverse global warming. And that book compiled the top 100 solutions for reducing emissions or drawing greenhouse gases out of the atmosphere. But its sequel enlarges and focuses the picture by looking at regeneration through six lenses. Number one is equity, or fairness, in all our social systems, which encompasses everything. The other lenses are reduction, in other words, stop putting greenhouse gases in the air, and protection of terrestrial systems, that's wetlands, forests, peatlands, etc. Sequestration of carbon through regenerative agriculture, proforestation, restoration of degraded land, etc. And influence, which is laws, regulations, policies, building codes and subsidies. And lastly, support for organisations that are doing the work. For life-enhancing solutions to global heating, the book Regeneration provides the how as well as the what. The four requirements for... Actually, I'm just, sorry, skipping a bit of the article here because I realise there's no chance we'll get through the whole thing. So this is going on to the bit of the book, part of the book, speaking on the subject of oceans. And it says the four requirements for sea forestation are anchoring sites, sunlight, cool water and lots of nutrients. For anchoring sites in the open ocean, sea foresters envision many 1 kilometre square platforms submerged just deep enough that the seaweeds barely touch the ocean surface and ships can pass over them. Renewable energy would be used to draw up nutrient-rich water from the cooler depths where the sun doesn't reach to irrigate the plants. If grown specifically for carbon absorption, the forests would be harvested regularly and sunk into the deep. Successful proof-of-concept projects have taken place from the Philippines to Tasmania, and the Climate Foundation estimates that as much as 3,000 tonnes of carbon per platform per year could be sunk into the ocean depths. Furthermore, if platforms were placed at the mouths of polluted rivers, the forest could reduce algae blooms by soaking up excess nitrogen and phosphorus and would produce oxygen during the day to reduce dead zones. And they could be grown along with a variety of fish and shellfish such as clams, scallops, oysters and mussels, which all filter microalgae and transform it into delicious edible protein. If the marine crop were red algae, it would provide another beneficial service, reducing methane emissions from the livestock industry. Researchers have found that replacing 0.5 to 5% of a cow's diet with Asparagopsis, which is a red algae, it reduces the methane they emit by 50 to 90%, while simultaneously facilitating weight gain. Sea farms are now growing miniature sea forests for food, but cultivation of macroalgae for other purposes could also become a profitable business, providing natural compounds for the cosmetics, agricultural and nutraceutical industries. The World Bank estimates that the seaweed oil industry alone could expand to support around 100 million jobs. Regeneration is an oversized book, dense with both meaning and information that in these times of sound bites and short attention spans takes commitment to fully read and digest, but it's worth every second of engagement. So the full title is Regeneration, Ending the Climate Crisis in One Generation. Thank you very much for listening, and I hope you can tune in next time. Have a lovely week.